When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof, Allbirds or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling, and for the shoppers buying, simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet. And the not-so-secret secret, with Shop Pay, that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going... So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell wherever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Businesses that sell more sell on Shopify. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout Skims uses. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/audioboom, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/audioboom to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/audioboom.
Dreaming of blissful summer days and creamy popsicles? Capture sun-drenched memories with the Orange Vanilla Dream Hydration Multiplier from Liquid IV. Just one stick and 16 ounces of water can help hydrate you better than water alone. Live your summer dream with Liquid IV. Tear, pour, live more. Go to liquidiv.com and get 20% off your first order with code INDULGE20 at checkout.
Hey everyone, it's Michelle Williams, and I love being able to share my story with you on my podcast, Checking In with Michelle Williams, where my guests and I, we get real as we share the ups and downs of our mental health journeys, and I'd love for you to join me. Hey, it's going to be your church and your turn up. So listen to Checking In with Michelle Williams every Tuesday, a part of the Black Effect on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Sports Grid Fantasy Football Podcast. My name is Davis Maddock. I'm joined by the ship chasing boys, Peter Overzet and Patrick Corain here. We're going to do some player news and notes stuff today because we're actually starting to get real news. Pete, we're hearing the drumbeat, the steady drumbeat for LaVisca Chenault, for DeAndre Swift. But also, we all just drafted together against each other. I think for the first time this offseason in the Kentucky Fantasy Football State Championship. There were some snipes and some re-snipes. We've had a couple days to sit back and think about our teams. Pete, how are you feeling about the team you drafted in the Kentucky State Fantasy Football Championship main event?
Yeah, the end game of the draft was a little frustrating. So in the moment, I didn't love how the draft overall felt. But now that we have it in the rearview mirror, I feel better about it. And just to set the table for people, if they're used to thinking about things from FFPC settings, the difference is that you can't start four running backs like you can in FFPC. It's two running backs, three wide receivers, one flex, and it's also not tight end premium. So it kind of skews to more wide receiver heavy builds, and the draft was reflective of that as those wide receivers came off the board quickly. The thing I love about our team is we have a six starting lineup in that we prioritized George Kittle in the second round, and we also grabbed what we thought was a pretty good value, Josh Allen, in the ninth round. He went off the board after guys like Matt Ryan and Carson Wentz, who normally go after him. So I like our starting lineup. I feel a little exposed at wide receiver, but otherwise these are the kind of builds I like.
Well, and of course, you know, Pat got his guy. He got Ronald Jones. He took him in the sixth round. I have to say though, me and my buddy, we took DeAndre Swift, and you know, after hearing some of the stuff that's come out the last 2 days, as we are just getting inundated with training camp news. I mean, it is just, and no one's working harder to cover it than Peter Overzet, obviously. You know, he's deep in The Athletic, just reading all of the trainer notebooks.
The funny thing is, I am actually deep in The Athletic, and I've been sending stuff to Pete, because I've been sending stuff to both of you on Twitter, but I've also been G-chatting Pete some additional nuggets, and he just doesn't even respond. So he can't even absorb it, even when it's getting force fed to him.
Well, why would he need to absorb something he already knows?
I'm literally brushing my teeth last night, getting ready for bed, and Pat's just sending me just a blitzkrieg of athletic screenshots over GChat. And I'm like, I can't even respond to one of these. Like, I'm really trying to mentally wind down right now.
Well, what's the latest on Dan Arnold, bud?
Dan Arnold, I haven't seen anything on from the reports, but Jalen Reagor is looking real good. And all these beat writers from Philly last year, they were just doing the steady drumbeat on Miles Sanders, and it has switched over to Jalen Reagor this year. So that was some of the propaganda that I was sending Pete, since we have Jalen Reagor on our main event team. But yeah, that's been one that I'm surprised Twitter isn't a little bit more buzzy on him, because the beats have been loving him.
Well, Twitter, like, Reagor was one of the guys we acknowledged after the NFL draft would be good for redraft. But to Peter's point from the other day, it was like Twitter just realized that A.J. Dillon might get significant carries this year when they saw his quads for the first time. Like, literally, it seemed like the first time that many people had considered that A.J. Dillon might be a factor in redraft leagues was when they saw that picture.
And also, the other thing, too, is like everyone agreed at Dynasty, and not to get away from the running backs, but everyone agreed that this was probably the best wide receiver rookie class since the 2014 year. Lots of those wide receivers from that 2014 class had immediate impacts, and yet the drafts still haven't been that reflective of the immediate impact that these guys like Brandon Ayuk and Laviska Shenault and Jalen Reagor are going to have, which is, I think, just a mistake that people are making. Like, the fact that Shenault's ADP still isn't right next to Brandon Ayuk's is wild.
Agreed. You're starting to see Reagor move up a little bit in some of the high stakes drafts, but and in some of the best ball stuff too, but he's still a very nice value. And even guys like Lamb, who I thought would be, you know, buzzier, he was, if anything, I feel like his ADP's fallen a little bit recently.
Lamb has fallen in ADP as Ayuk and Reagor have risen in ADP, because, you know, there's just only so much hype to go around, and there's always going to be a couple people in every draft who's like, well, I'm not taking these rookie wide receivers. I need to get Mike Williams. I need to get Anthony Miller. I need to get Cole Beasley. I need to get John Brown. Like, I need these established vets.
Hey, we drafted John Brown in this. Take it easy.
Well, you drafted John Brown because you needed to do the stack, which is...
Yeah, we stacked him with Allen.
In the Kentucky League, that was the first time that I had taken N'Keal Harry in any high-stakes format. I've taken him in best ball and stuff, but that's my first share in a league that, actually matters.
I think now that we've done so many drafts, like, what's kind of crystallizing for me of how I want to approach these rookies is... there's that tier in the fifth, sixth round with the Akers, Dobbins, and Swift. And I've been mixing in shares of Swift and Akers there, specifically in true zero RB builds when that's my first running back off. And then we all know these guys like Zach Moss, Antonio Gibson before the guy stuff, like those guys were just smashes much cheaper. And there's lots of other good rookie values. And then with wide receivers, you know, we've been smashing Shenault. And to me, it's been in that other range where the Reagor, Lamb, Judy, Ruggs range, we've been honing in on Reagor. I do want to start mixing in more Lamb. We did that in our tri-manage team. And another guy I want to get more of there is Ruggs. So I think what I'm trying to say is, like, picking your spots at these guys that are properly valued and spreading it out, and then continuing to hammer the guys like Zach Moss and Laviska Shenault, who are way underpriced.
And Ayuk, we passed on Ayuk to take John Brown to get that stack. And we also had John Paulson on, who was saying he's higher on Brown. So it did make some sense, but I regret it. I wish we went with Ayuk. Things are looking, obviously, that this was pre-Hurd injury. That's even more bullish now for Ayuk. And he's someone that I think you could just absolutely see smash this year. I was actually reading an article on The Athletic about, yeah, of course. And it was, The beat was basically saying, who is the deep threat on this team? Is it Jerick McKinnon? Like, who actually has speed? I think it might be Ayuk. He led the nation in yards after catch last year, but a lot of that was not just on, like, slant routes and screens and stuff. He had tons of yards after catch on deep balls. And I think even though he's not, like, a true burner, that he should be. He's got size. He's got like these crazy long arms. I think he could be the deep option to start the season and maybe for the entire year in that offense.
Do we have any good training camp stuff coming out about Ayuk? You know, we've heard that you know, Mike McCarthy views CeeDee Lamb as, you know, a number one wide receiver that they think they can have 3 1,000-yard wide receivers. We've seen obviously all of the LaVisca hype has been incredible to witness from the outside. Obviously, mm-hmm. you know, we've all been very into the Visca 2 Live highlights, but you know, I have not seen anything specific from the San Francisco area beat writers on Ayuk, you know, being a standout or being bad. You know, neither way, just haven't really heard much other than really the Hurd injury.
I haven't heard a ton about Ayuk specifically other than that he's just like, you know, keeps moving up the depth chart.
In this point where we are now starting, you can feel this year the hunger for training camp blurbs. Like, I don't want to be the full Debbie Downer because it is just so fun to have this stuff back. But the kind of leaps in the A to C thoughts that people are making from these blurbs. Like, I saw one earlier where Cam Akers, it's a grainy footage and he just catches a little pass in the flat. And someone's like, the beat report goes, Cam Akers, you know, demonstrating how well he catches the ball with his fingers. And I'm like, what is going on?
I mean, we had a photo of AJ Green with no pads on that was taken on a cell phone through a pair of binoculars, Peter. And this was making the rounds this morning. Like, this is how thirsty people are for training camp news. And I actually think, you know, something that you guys have been talking about on Ship Chasing is that the ADPs end up being very efficient by that weekend in Las Vegas. And I actually think without preseason games, I don't know if we're going to end up seeing the ADPs for the zero RB guys getting that inefficient because we're literally not going to have anything to go on other than training camp reports and injuries.
Yeah, and I wonder how many of these nuggets are getting captured. Like, so for example, in the Chiefs backfield, it looks like for now it's Darrell Williams. That's
over
what
DeAndre.
Yeah. Over DeAndre. Yeah. And so we just may have had that wrong. But
I'm not willing
preseason,
to go there yet.
Yeah. I don't know why it didn't seem like DeAndre Washington was working with the ones at all yesterday. I don't know why that is. Maybe that'll change. Maybe he was just nursing something. But yeah, Williams was like very heavily involved right after CEH. So,
well, I mean, he knows the offense already. There is no preparations or extra stuff they have to do to tell Darrell where to be and what to do. He already knows it.
But this is what I mean, though, about how absurd it is to draw conclusions after like one day. Like, I was reading one about the Titans and stuff, and it was like Derrick Henry ended up like leaving to go to the locker room. They were just kind of like managing one thing. Like, there could be literally any reason in the world of why Darrell Williams. It could be they drew rock, paper, scissors for who was going to go with the first. Like, why are we reading into this?
Well, like, we're not. I mean, we're not like changing our entire draft philosophy, but I do think it's something to pay attention to. And then because we're going to have less concrete information, it's just something to stay up on. Pete, you got to learn how to grind the news, man.
So yeah, and this is my
literally
David,
you need to grind the news, bro. You need to learn to know what's noise and what's real.
Do you know what I have? I have a contact grind high. Like, I am grinding the second hand grind smoke from everyone where I know all the news just by getting a contact high.
But let's to Pete's point, I want to talk a little about the Hockenson thing because that was an example of us.
My
like,
man Pat
overreacting.
Did the grinding.
Yeah, I did some grinding on Hockenson because we got this report yesterday that Hockenson wasn't 100% on his ankle. He's just going to try to play through it. It did not sound good. And then another beat reporter came out, I think like basically at the same time, but I saw it later, and he was saying how great Hockenson looked. He was making this leaping over the catch shoulder in stride. He's just like, looks great out there. He said maybe he still wasn't 100%, but he was great. He was 100% running routes. So, you know, it's this type of stuff where I think you don't want to get too carried away with one report, but it's better to know it than not know it when we're not going to have the preseason stuff to go on.
Well, that Hockenson one is actually very instructive at this point too, because I ended up reading the screenshot that Pat sent me, and the beat reporter said after talking to him that his hesitation was more mental, you know, which if anyone's ever come off of an injury, you know, you're not super excited to press down on that, you know, foot right away if your ankle is tender. But he's saying that
we're
it's fully rehab.
We're getting a hand in the dirt take from Peter Overbet here.
I just like
literally
these guys, I just can't take it. I just need the season to start. But to going to pull back on all this, people stop it. People are gonna make massive adjustment mistakes to these beat news, whereas Agreed. The preseason has been extremely informative, seeing those personnel groupings, who looks good, blah blah blah. This year people are going to make massive mistakes, as Denny Carter says, adjusting their ranks.
So
the Hawkinson thing verbatim, this is the quote: Monday Hawkinson looked very fluid, running routes from several different alignments. He said he felt the ankle a little bit, sounded more like a mental hurdle than a physical one, but that he's a full go if a little rusty, a huge step. So it's like you can spin this as like, oh God, his ankle's not 100%, or like he's made huge strides, he's going to crush this season.
So I do want to, while we're talking about the Detroit stuff, I guess first off, I think I agreed with your original take, Pat, which was you can move Hawkinson below Gesicki and Fant now, but I'm not moving him out. Like, I'm not moving him
in. I don't recall saying Gesicki.
Well, those amongst us who have good rankings and good tiers, we have him there. So I think I'm not putting him down there with Jarwin, Ian Thomas, those guys yet.
The only problem with kind of making those slight tweaks is it's like, well, then Hawkinson's going to become a value, right? He's going to slip into the 11th or 12th instead of the 9th or 10th. And then it's like, okay, so are we passing up on him in the 12th if we're getting a discount? No. Or are we just passing up on him at current cost if it's not baked in?
The point I made was that I have been taking Hawkinson over Fant basically every single time, because I just think he was the better prospect and his rookie season was stronger, and I like the quarterback play better. But now with that decision, I'll probably lean Fant for the time being, if anything, to get myself personally some more exposure to Fant. But if Hawkinson's going to drop by even a round, then I'm just going to take the discount. I think that a round would more than price in whatever ankle uncertainty there is.
Right.
So while we're here on the Lions, I want to talk about something that is going to get prickly with you two, which is that I think DeAndre Swift might now be part of like a modified zero RB build in the fifth for sure. And I would maybe start thinking about him earlier than that if Kerryon continues to not practice. So on Saturday, it was Kerryon Johnson's birthday. The Lions official Twitter account tweeted out a picture of him in a leg brace that, I mean, honest to God, Peter, we've hung out in person. Actually, both of us have. That leg brace was bigger than me, I think, is probably the most accurate way to put that. And now we're getting reports that Kerryon's not practicing, you know, getting days off already. Like, is DeAndre Swift 2020 Miles Sanders, Pat?
Well, Pete, I want to get your thoughts first on what it's like to come out of a leg brace and to trust that leg again.
Yeah. Tell us about trusting a knee after it's given out on you first.
Yeah, well, some of us are actually athletes and know how this stuff goes down. But first of all, I'll let Pat talk. But we're not out on DeAndre Swift. We drafted him at 6'5" in our quad squad with our RotoViz bros. I do think, like I said, I'm mixing in him and Akers there in true zero RB builds as my first running back off the table. I have no point or any disagreement on him being a good pick there.
Yeah, agreed. And Swift has been the guy for me over Akers in that range. He's been the guy for me over Akers in Dynasty. I just think his pass catching really jumps out. And Kerryon Johnson has been, I think, the bigger threat to get the touchdown work. But if that changes, if Swift can basically be getting a bunch of receptions and goal line carries, then he's an awesome value. And I think the Miles Sanders comparison is apt. I was like going back and forth with some guys on Twitter, and I made that same comparison and then was specifically kind of comparing the situation with, you know, Jordan Howard versus Kerryon Johnson. I got a lot of pushback, like, how dare you compare Kerryon Johnson to Jordan Howard? But, you know, I think that it could be a little similar in that Swift, I think, is very clearly the better receiver. And I think Kerryon, if he's healthy, is a pretty good rusher between the tackles, but wouldn't necessarily have a complete lock on the goal line work where, you know, Swift probably needs half that goal line work. And if he's getting like, I think he's got paths to like 55, 60 receptions. And I think if he is what we think he is, then he should be looking at 45 or so receptions in a pretty much full-time role as that lead guy there. And that'll pay off his ADP, I think, pretty regularly.
Are you in line with that, Pete?
Yeah, I am.
So I think the reason why Swift is going to start to become a priority for me is I'm not really worried about the goal line work. I could definitely see that mattering to or see that playing out to some degree, but the Lions are so pass heavy and have been so pass heavy for long stretches of Stafford's career. And then also Stafford played so well last year. You know, that 8-game stretch really was like, I remember thinking about MVP stuff when he got hurt last year and being like, well, yeah, he's probably been like the fourth or fifth best quarterback in the NFL. And and you guys were talking about this on your ship chasing episode the other day when we were talking, when you guys were trying to not spoil Pat's tight end research, was that like they were so bad when they switched quarterbacks when Driscoll and Blau were playing, like that it's kind of clouding our opinion of Galladay, of Marvin Jones, of TJ Hawkinson. And, you know, like it wouldn't surprise me if Swift ends up being like a 65% backfield opportunity back in like the 8th best offense in football or something like that, which would mean like he's basically a league winning player at that point going in the 5th round.
Yeah, I definitely think he has that in his range of outcomes. He's a really nice pick still, I think, in the 5th round. Once you get into the 4th though, then you have Jonathan Taylor in that range, and Taylor's been getting a ton of buzz.
So much buzz, yeah.
Yeah.
And the other nice thing about where Swift and Akers have been going is you're slamming all of those great wide receiver targets in the 4th and the 5th round. You know, you're grabbing up Sutton, DJ Chark, Metcalf, all those guys, and then they come off the board, and then there's a little bit of a dead zone.
There's a lull.
Yeah, I guess sometimes people are reaching for Gallup and stuff in that range, but to me, it's just a logical pit stop for a running back, and then you can come back and grab a Christian Kirk or Mecole Hardman or whoever, N'Keal Harry after that. But I don't see a ton of opportunity cost normally where DeAndre Swift is going. But to Pat's point, if he inches up there, I'm still not drafting him over a guy like Diggs or Sutton or whoever.
So I want to admit something in the safety of this podcast. I did actually adjust my rankings after I saw the AJ Dillon photo. I did legitimately move him up like 3 spots because I was just
That's
like,
amazing.
Well, for I also think that we're getting some good beat chatter on Jamal Williams maybe not making the team and Dexter Williams making the team over him because Dexter Williams is a good special teams player. You know, has played special teams for you know, played it in college, played it last year for them as well. And Jamal Williams, not as much of a special teamer.
Tyler Irvin getting a little bit of buzz there too, as a guy the special teams coach just loves. And
do you think he's good enough to be captain of the special teams though?
Well, that's a very high bar, Davis. I don't know about that.
I saw a take on Twitter, and I apologize because I don't remember who said it, and I liked the take in that it was the Packers are going to kind of try to emulate what the Saints did, where they have an alpha wide receiver in Michael Thomas, you know, Davante Adams in this instance, and then go to, you know, your thunder and lightning with Aaron Jones and A.J. Dillon, the Latavius Murray, Alvin Kamara, where it's just like those are going to be your best weapons on offense. You don't have much beyond that at tight end and in depth wide receiver, and you're just going to build around that. And if that thesis is true, then A.J. Dillon is massively undervalued right now.
Well, particularly if he's not Latavius Murray, but Mark Ingram.
That's what I meant. Mark Ingram. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And in that case, then he's just an absolute smash. I mean, a true absolute smash at his ADP.
So I've started to work him in a little bit more, not being facetious. The ranks were adjusted after seeing the training camp report. The other guy who I have, well, two guys who I have adjusted the ranks on, Damian Harris and Rex Burkhead. So first off, is James White banged up or something? But like in these Patriots training camp reports,
The three running backs that have been playing with Cam Newton, Jared Sim, and Brian Hoyer have been Rex Burkhead, Damian Harris, and J.J. Taylor or Patrick Taylor. I don't remember which one it is, but an undrafted free agent running back. Pat, do you know if there's a reason James White is not practicing?
I haven't heard that. But yeah, I think that Harris and Burkhead, I mean, it's like their stock's way up. Michelle's stock's way down. Yeah. So I think you got to decide. You don't even really have to decide. I think both Harris's ADP is fine. It hasn't really shot up a ton. And then Burkhead's ADP, I mean, he's like free. And I think it's partly because Lamar Miller has kind of, you know, kept some of the value down there. I mean, in the Kentucky draft, Lamar Miller was taking rounds ahead of Burkhead, which selected Burkhead. Yeah. And I think that Miller, he may not even start the season.
He's not going to make the team, I don't think.
Yeah, he probably won't make the team. And even if he does, he'll probably start on PUP. So I don't see any point in drafting him. But Harris and Burkhead both look like values right now. And Harris, I think, and White is, assuming everything's fine with his health and stuff, I think someone that you should be trying to mix in best ball.
Are you on board with Damian Harris and Rex Burkhead at cost right now, Pete?
Yeah, although I much prefer Rex Burkhead. I just normally find other running backs in the Harris range that I prefer over him. And I think was it you who posted a blurb on Burkhead this morning?
I've been grinding the news. I'm an FFPC news and information grinder now, bud. I am your enemy.
James White was out there, by the way, yesterday catching passes. Maybe not with Cam Newton for some reason.
I mean, James White has been on the team. This is his sixth season on the team. Like, what do they need to see from him? Like,
yeah, exactly. Fine. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, so I think this is an interesting exercise then. Damian Harris, the last 2 days, 13 drafts in the Football Guys Players Championship, $350 entry. This is where he's going. He's going as the RB50, 129th overall. These are the picks that are preceding him. Tony Pollard, Daryl Henderson, Boston Scott, Keyshawn Vaughn, Duke Johnson, Chase Edmonds. Then it goes Damian Harris. He's right next to A.J. Dillon. He's right next to DeAndre Washington, actually going ahead of Sony Michel. So basically, he is the last – well, he and A.J. Dillon are the last premium zero RB targets, basically. Do you think that's the right ranking, Pat?
Well, I would definitely be taking him over Edmonds. I would take him over Duke Johnson. Those are not guys that I've really been targeting. They don't really jump out to me among the zero running back targets, so it's easy enough for me to move them ahead. Edmonds didn't really catch any passes last year. He doesn't have any goal line equity. So I think Harris, if he has that lead job, would definitely beat those two. I would still prefer like Boston Scott and the earlier guys you mentioned. And I think A.J. Dillon, like Harris, should be above the other two. And he is someone that I would consider in that first group.
Yeah, and like in our KFFSC draft, you know, Damian Harris went in the 12th. We took Rex Burkhead in the 16th. I think there's, you know, I think you can make just about as good of a case for Rex Burkhead getting that role as Damian Harris at this point. I think their ADP should probably be much closer, you know, together in the, you know, the 14th round or so, because I am taking Darrington Evans, A.J. Dillon, and I would even take Duke Johnson over Damian.
We're not even that far removed from Rex Burkhead being like a fourth round pick in fantasy football leagues.
I remember that.
Right, I know.
Contract
year narrative, dude. Contract year for Rex Burkhead.
Oh, love God. It.
Hey, God, while we're talking about other bees in my training camp grinder bonnet, let's just talk about this Darrington Evans thing that happened the other day. So it was before they went padded practice. He had a couple of drops that apparently a few people observed. And fumbles, all of Twitter, it was fumbles. All of Twitter was ready to anoint Derrick Henry as just a guy who's going to get 400 carries, all the pass work, never coming off the field. I mean, this guy has to be drafted at 101 under this thesis. And yet, then a few days later, it's like, oh, no, you know, Darrington Evans looks great in practice. He's shifty. He's catching balls. I mean, the overreactions to this stuff is just – it's out of control, guys.
Yeah, no, I agree. Because Henry is now – I think he went at 106 in the KFFSC draft.
Derrick Henry has officially jumped the shark.
Yeah, I'm not really on board with it. He's never been used in a three down role. If he is used in a three down role, he will crush his ADP. He will. I mean, he should be probably like the 102 if he's using a three down role, but I just don't think that he will be. And I'm going to need more than like a couple Darrington Evans fumbles to update that prior.
And it's literally just they're not going to give him 35 carries a game. Like, they've always used someone else in a change of pace role. So even if they use him a little bit more in the screen game, it still means there's 10 to 15 touches available for other running backs in that offense.
I mean, we all agree that Dion Lewis was terrible last year, right? Yeah. Like, did not even come close to what we expected of him from a fantasy perspective or anything. He still played 37% of the team snaps in the regular season, right? Like, the team can give Derrick Henry all the money. They can do whatever they want. They can say whatever they want, but he just does not profile as a guy who should be playing on passing downs a ton. And we all like universally expect them to be in more negative game scripts this year than they were last year. Like, they kicked one field goal after Ryan Tannehill took over. They just scored touchdowns on every drive. It's very, very unlikely to repeat itself. It's just setting up to get, it's just set up to get owned by Derrick Henry so hard. There is no more lib owning player in the National Football League than Derrick Henry.
Well, I will say, like, if you want to get some exposure to Henry, do it in underdog, do it in the half point PPR format. Where going with the hyper fragile running back start, you know, where you just take like 3 to 4 running backs in the entire draft, but you get them all early. Like, get your Derrick Henry exposure that way. I still think that reaching for him in these high stakes managed leagues is not the way to go.
You have to take him over Travis Kelce, over George Kittle a lot of the times in those formats, and I would so much rather lock up that elite tight end.
Oh, here's something that would be interesting to talk about, because someone was asking Pat and I about not having a ton of Michael Thomas this year as it pertains to being zero RB guys. Cause you would imagine that that's normally who you would be taking. As I was kind of thinking through it, especially as it pertains to FFPC settings, it's really hard to get Michael Thomas because, you know, if you're drafting one of those top five running backs that we're still on board to do, and then if you're at like 6 or 7, I'm often wanting to lock up Travis Kelce because I'm worried I'm not going to get Kittle coming back in the second. And then you basically have to be at like 10 or 11 and have Michael Thomas fall to you to the point where you feel comfortable grabbing Michael Thomas.
You get Kittle.
So that's why I don't have a lot of him, but it has nothing to do with Michael Thomas as the player. I'd be very happy to have him as my wide receiver one. Pat, what did you think when you saw that question?
Yeah, no, I completely agree. I think if we had had the 105 in our main, I think we would have a share of Thomas. We had the 104 until Kamara, and that was when Cook's holdout was making him like not even in consideration at that high of a pick. But we haven't really been. It's like a very specific setup, because I agree with you. Like, once you get down a little later and you know you're not going to have a chance to get the tight end on the way back, and it's a little too early to select Andrews in the early second, then I'd rather start with the tight end. So, I do feel a little underexposed to Thomas this year, which is a weird feeling considering, you know, we do tend to prefer wide receivers early.
But actually, because of the way that the board shakes out this year and we like the wide receivers in rounds 2, 3, 4, and 5 so much, he actually, like, in a weird way, does not fit the the official thesis of the zero RB argument is that you want to just be crushing at quarterback, tight end, and wide receiver every single week. And in the FFPC format, it's very important to get Kelce, Kittle, or Mark Andrews. And, you know, all three of us do really like to take Dak and Kyler and Deshaun Watson there in the 6th and 7th round. So, like, in a weird way, Michael Thomas, like, doesn't fit those builds a lot of the time, because that if you're taking Michael Thomas, you're doing the full Blair Andrews, where the first running back you take is Tariq Cohen in the 11th round.
Yeah, I think that's true.
And it can get really gross too. Like, so when I did my pros versus Joes, I was in the 12th slot, and Kelce, Kittle, and Michael Thomas all go, which then it's so frustrating because then you know Mark Andrews isn't coming back to you at 312. And the zero RB teams that I've built, like the one we did with Hassan and Blair that I love, is when we are hammering everyone at every slot other than running back. Because, you know, we're rolling out Kyler, Kittle, and four alpha wide receivers. That's going to be really tough for teams to compete with. But when you get stuck in that slot, and yeah, you're hammering them at wide receiver, but you don't have a massive advantage at quarterback and tight end, that's where zero RB can get more suspect.
So the thing with the tight ends, like, and we have another football guys draft we'll do before the end of the year. In our main event, we know we have the 101, so obviously not taking Thomas there. But let's say we were to get a mid first in the last football guys were doing, then I would be open to taking Thomas, because while I really like Kelce, I really like Kittle, I'm super hyped on Andrews. There are tight ends later that I do like. We talked about Hockenson. I'm still on him. I'm definitely in. On him, I like Higbee a lot. Pete, I know you're not super hyped on Higbee, but I the tight end research I did really put me
maybe
excited on him.
Maybe me and you should do a team and just draft all the guys that Peter doesn't like.
That's a good idea.
And then Peter and I could do a team, and we won't take Rojo or Chenault.
And you can take Gesicki.
I don't like the framing of this because Pat definitely has way more opinions and preferences on guys.
It's 100% true that Pat is the driver of like the hyper specific player selection with you guys, no doubt.
Because yeah. I just care more about the construction. And I will tie this back to the tight end thing. The reason I greatly prefer one of those elite tight ends is because it frees you up not to have to waste two roster spots on one. Whereas if you are waiting to the Hockenson Gesicki tier, I don't feel comfortable
just having one.
Well, I just wanted to say that there's some later guys like in these best ball leagues that I'm actually trying to get a little bit away from the two tight end construction that I've just been hammering throughout, because I am starting to get a little bit more excited about Chris Herndon. I just think available targets, you got Mims banged up. Adam and Evan talked about this on their pod. You've got the Jets now saying that Herndon's the starter. Herndon's rookie year was super strong, so he's kind of that post-hype candidate guy. He's someone that I've been trying to figure out ways to get more of. And then the other dude that I'm, you know, it's kind of a gross one, but I'm trying to figure out how to draft a little bit more Jay Sternberger to leave that third, you know, three tight end constructions, which generally you're not going to take Sternberger if you have like an Andrews and like a Hockenson.
Are you worried that Sternberger still hasn't practiced?
I was just going to say, you haven't been grinding the beats enough.
Yeah, he hasn't been grinding the athletic hard enough.
The Robert Tonyan report today.
Oh, maybe I see on Tonyan. The thing with Sternberger, the reason I like him is because he's a pretty.
You just got outworked, Pat.
Oh, geez. Oh, God. Now he's on the COVID list, but I just think that they don't have like anyone. Well, maybe I need to look in a bit more into Tonyan, but I do think that Sternberger, given what he did in college, he had a really nice receiving share, and it's just like they straight up don't have other people to throw to. So.
Hang on, let me read this for Pat.
It's a very funny quote.
All right, this is from Matt Schneidman, Green Bay Packers writer for The Athletic. I don't know if you've heard of it, Pat. Matt LaFleur says Robert Tonyan is absolutely in play to be tight end one. Sounds like MLF is pleased in what he has with Tonyan and Sternberger as two pass catchers atop that group.
All right, dude, you just outgrinded me. I'll move off to Sternberger.
The fact that I just witnessed noted news and information grinder Peter Overzet do his thing, like I feel like it's watching like Babe Ruth hit a home run or something.
Contact high news grinder over here.
That was a real, real impressive move, Pete. All right, but are you with me on Chris Herndon?
Yes. Yeah. I think that it's sort of all like it's like everything that we believed last year was true. He just isn't suspended for eight games or whatever.
Okay.
Like Herndon was he was getting touted on the ESPN fantasy football podcast. Like he was a mainstream sleeper.
And that also is one of the, and we can roast us for our pick of Hunter Henry in the KFFFC draft. Oh. So we took him in the 10th. Herndon goes in the 17th. And that, I mean, that
Irv Smith Jr. We took him with our second to last pick.
Yeah. I also want to go on the record. Because Davis, you're out here saying that I picked him. First of all, Pat was literally the one drafting. And if you roll back the tape, I was pushing for Boston Scott. And I'm not blaming Pat.
You were pushing for Boston Scott with about 2 seconds left to go. And I couldn't, my nimble fingers couldn't get Boston Scott up the queue fast enough.
I got to say, Peter is an incredibly nimble drafter. He doesn't panic. He gets the, like, it's pretty impressive.
Well, I've done about 100.
He timed out on Marlon Mack. He's not that nimble.
No.
We have Marlon Mack for 20 seconds on our team.
That was a software error by FFP.
Oh, okay.
So another late round tight end. If we are gonna do this, the drum beat. If you hear it, starting to get kind of loud for Eric Ebron. We're hearing from training camp that the team is planning on playing more 12 personnel with Vance and Ebron. And, I do follow Pat Thorman on Twitter, and a more eager and vicious Eric Ebron truther has never existed. It's really incredible.
The Ebron stuff's funny because they're basically just saying, like, we cannot get this dude to block. Like, they're making him do the yeah. blocking sled and stuff. They're just like, he hates it. He hates to block. So it's kind of great. Like, they're just going to have to use him as a receiver.
I also, speaking of me grinding news reports, another thing that can, lead us to the Eric Ebron take here is someone said Big Ben was kind of short-arming his deep throws. Mm. I hate that I know this. I hate
yeah,
that.
Yeah, dude, you're a secret grinder, dude.
I can't believe how much Peter has been influenced by his environment of all these drafts. Like, he doesn't want to give up the competitive advantage of not knowing that Ben's been short-arming his deep throws.
Now I know why he wasn't responding to my chats, because he was
already
grinding.
In the Athletic.
So if Big Ben can't throw it deep to James Washington and Deontay Johnson, I mean – this has to mean Eric Ebron just eating up targets 15 yards over the middle of the field with Juju, right?
Yeah, although I don't know if you saw the Chase Claypool.
God, that was
his leaping
absurd
catch on air. You know, he mossed that fake cornerback.
Dude, I'm serious. I could go film a highlight reel right now, like at a school. And based on what impresses these people, they would think that I was like the next Julian Edelman.
Sounds like a TikTok to me.
Maybe I should.
I actually think this is a good. Yeah, this is a good move for your TikTok career. It's got.
Should
like
I do it with my shirt off and just really just try to go all in and get all of the engagements?
Only if you want to go first round, bro.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's a pretty solid idea. Okay, last thing I want to talk about, then we can get out of here. Another guy who is getting some high praise via training camp Twitter, Irv Smith Jr., been roasting Vikings defensive backs in practice, and just, you know, I've just been combing through my projections and, you know, moving AJ Dillon up based on the size of his calves and just, you know, seeing what things are needing to get ready for the season. And just looking at this Vikings depth chart, I mean, what is really stopping Irv Smith Jr. from 20% of the Vikings targets, Pat? Seriously.
Well, it's not Kyle Rudolph. I don't know if you saw on the Athletic, Arif Hasan had a really funny note. He did 73 observations for 73 players on the Vikings. Talking up Irv Smith. Listen to this. Listen to this. He said, this is a quote. "I haven't noted much about Kyle Rudolph, negative or positive, at the moment, and that's the result of not keeping track of him more than anything to say about his performance thus far." He just didn't bother to look at him.
Sounds like it could have been
Kyle
72.
Rudolph.
Sounds like he wasn't grinding hard enough.
Grinding the Rudolph tape. But then, of course, he has right above that a tweet of Irv Smith catching a touchdown and says he's looked good as a blocker. He's looked good lining up out wide, rather than the slot. So, yeah, I think Irv Smith's stock is up.
Yeah, I mean, he to me seems like everyone is kind of rushing to draft Justin Jefferson, but like, shouldn't Irv Smith probably get more targets than him this year? He's not that popular, I guess.
The word on Justin Jefferson has not been all that bullish.
Great.
It's basically like, he looks like a rookie. Now it's like, he doesn't look bad, but he's not. And he looks like maybe they can move him around, but they're basically, they're still hoping they can play him outside so they can move Thielen into the slot. If they can't do that, then you could see Jefferson splitting time with Irv Smith in the slot. Assuming Rudolph's lined up in line more.
So for Irv Smith, we probably want Justin Jefferson to be good enough to play outside, I guess.
No, I think we don't. I think because then Thielen's in the slot. Oh,
yeah. I see what you're saying. Right. Yeah.
You want him competing directly with Jefferson.
Here's still the thing, though, with all of these tight ends, right, and why I still think it's so important to get one of these elite ones is when we are targeting these breakout tight ends, we were talking about Hawkinson, Fant, Gesicki, all this, we are trying to bink one of these guys becoming a top five tight end who gets the volume where they're a plug-and-play start for you every single week without hesitation. Even if Herndon and guys like Irv Smith, I don't personally see it in their range of outcomes to become top five like every week starters. Yeah. And I think they can be great bi-week fill-ins, great depth if someone gets hurt, but they're still not exciting me in a way where I think they're going to fundamentally change my starting lineup because I'm not going to know when to start these guys. Dare I say I prefer them in best ball.
I agree with you on Irv Smith, but I do not on Herndon. I think Herndon does have a top five season in his range of outcomes just because he was so good as a rookie. And there's just a ton of target uncertainty. I mean, like Mims, Perriman, Crowder. Like Crowder, we're just assuming is going to get a ton of targets, but Crowder's not very good.
Hey, so sir, I am not assuming that. And I think Crowder sucks. And I want you to tell that to Michael Leone in the Establish the Run Slack.
All right.
Tell that.
I'll run over and tell him. But yeah, because I think people are just, when you project out the Jets, the targets have to go somewhere. And for now they're going to Crowder, but I think that Herndon could take a lot of those targets. And you know, as a tight end, like that's really what it comes down to. Are you going to get targeted at a really high rate? And he showed that he can be efficient on his targets as well. So, you know, there's obviously the Adam Gase factor, but I think that Herndon has a ceiling that some of these other guys don't.
I agree. I think Herndon could lead the Jets in targets basically. And I don't see that as a range of outcomes for Hunter Henry. Just specifically no reason to mention Hunter Henry. Just wanted to throw
no reason.
Pete, what do we have to look forward to this week on the ship chasing stream?
Well, I just wish Pat would have told me he was so high on Herndon before we were drafting like Devin Azigbo over him in our KFFFC draft.
We already had two tight ends, dude.
That is kind of a bombshell to me.
Your Hunter Henry call ruined it.
we took the Philly defense with Herndon still on the board.
Shameful, bro.
Well, we can revisit in the FFPC with the tight end premium.
Well, yeah. What night are we drafting all together in the listener league?
Yeah, we need to get that scheduled. We're trying to spin up some other satellites for people who didn't get in, but I think it will be one of the next two Sundays is when we will get that on the books.
All right, beautiful. Everyone follow Peter on Twitter, at Peter Overzet. Follow Pat Corain, at Pat Corain, and listen to Ship Chasing. Read all of Pat's stuff on Establish the Run. Follow Peter on TikTok.
I'm launching a new pod with Mike Leone. Yes, you are. Just hit iTunes today. So Establish the Edge. Check that out too.
Establish the Edge, everybody. There we go. All right, everyone. Thanks for listening.
Build digital-first customer relationships with Salesforce Digital 360. Connect every marketing, commerce, and digital experience on a single platform. Innovate fast with easy-to-launch sites, campaigns, and apps. That's more relationships, more revenue, more return, and more success. Salesforce Digital 360. Hear from our customers at sfdc.co/digital360.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof, Allbirds or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling, and for the shoppers buying, simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet. And the not-so-secret secret, with Shop Pay, that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going... So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell wherever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Businesses that sell more sell on Shopify. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout Skims uses. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/audioboom, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/audioboom to upgrade your selling today. Shopify.com/audioboom.